This is Olive, and I'm 11 years old, and I live in Southside.
This is Cooper, and I'm 4 years old.
This is Elena. I'm 13 years old and live in Spickley.
This is Julian. I'm 14 years old and live in Highland Park. And this is the Kittsburg Podcast.
So glad you're along for this Kittsburg Podcast. I'm Yuling Chang, the director of Kittsburg, and I'm sure if you're like most families, you've dealt with stress.
I know I have. I'm Christine Sorensen with KDKA-TV in Kittsburg, and on this episode, we're going to learn how the whole family can manage stress with advice from some experts, and we'll also talk with teenagers about how they manage it themselves.
And I'm Melissa Rayworth, the editor of Kittsburg, and we're going to start with a hidden gem that you can go to de-stress, animal friends. Now, I know we hear from many families that are looking for ways to volunteer with their kids. We often think about getting involved with an organization like Voluntots or thinking about charities that need help. And I don't know if families always think of the fact that you can also volunteer with animals. Animal Friends is a place that my younger son and I started volunteering, I think almost 2 years ago, and it's been a fantastic experience. Teens between 13 and 16 who volunteer with a parent can get trained to spend time with cats and kittens who are waiting for their forever homes. There are so many great things about this. It's not only a stress reducer to visit the Animal Friends location and get yourself signed in and then go into these rooms where the cats are and, according to the training you've been given, take out a little kitten and just spend some time with it. You're trying to help these animals get used to being around people. It is totally stress reducing, but it's also a real bonding thing to do with your teenager. I know with my teenage sons, given that they were always busy with their activities and I was working, but I was always looking for ways that we could connect. And so for my son and I, this became this sort of just mellow thing that we would do together and spend time with these animals and talk about maybe how one animal seemed a bit different a week later. They seem to be getting more comfortable with people, see how they're growing. The funny thing is, even when you arrive and an animal that you've been taking care of is no longer there, although you wish you could play with them again, you're really happy for them because you know they must have found their forever home. The volunteer organizers are great about sending out emails. They let you know when a pet's been adopted out. They let you know in the emails about the new pets that have arrived. And the training is really easy. You start with an information session, which you sign up for online, and then you really get trained on how to take care of the animals. And at first, you start off at the green level. You're dealing with the cats who are already going to be pretty comfortable. And then if you continue on with the training, you can work even with the animals that are struggling a little bit more or maybe have some kind of issues. Younger kids can also get involved at Animal Friends through the Humane Education Program. And we'll make sure to put a link to that in the show notes on our website.
I've been to Animal Friends as well, and it's a beautiful space. I mean, it's a wonderful campus that they have where volunteers can help with the pets. And I also appreciate that even if you're not old enough to volunteer, there's other ways that you can be a part of volunteering at Animal Friends. So, for example, I know one of my kids at their elementary school, they did a kind of a food drive donation, but for items that Animal Friends needed. The other thing they did as a service project was they made blankets that were donated to the shelter for the animals as an item of comfort, right? So you always want to go to their website and see what items they need most at that time. But it's great that they've found different avenues for younger children.
Yeah, of all ages. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we've also done some fundraisers for Animal Friends at our school, and it was initiated by the kids because there's some special connection that kids often have with animals, and I can just see it in my house how the stress level goes down when the kids are around our dog. And the same thing can happen whether you have a pet or not. It can happen right there at Animal Friends.
Pittsburgh is Kittsburgh. You're listening to the Kittsburgh Podcast.
And there are lots of ways to both prevent stress and manage it when it happens. And here's our interview now with the experts.
Parents and kids need a lot of different skills to navigate daily life. Among the most important ones is managing stress. We know life can throw lots of challenges at us. But if we have some skills and habits that help us manage the way we're feeling, our days and nights can be a whole lot easier. Today on the Kittsburgh Podcast, we're talking with Paige Chelowinski and Chloe Scott. They both work as behavioral health educators with Allegheny Health Network's Chill Project. We're excited to ask them about the tools that all of us can use to lower our stress levels and manage stress whenever it arises. Paige and Chloe, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So we hear a lot about stress among students and parents. Where might parents start if they want to talk with their kids about stress and maybe brainstorm some ideas to improve how they're feeling?
So as you mentioned, no one is immune from stress, and we see that everyone is affected by stress in different ways throughout their lifespan. One really great way for parents to start talking about how stress may be affecting their children is to create an environment where children feel comfortable talking about emotions and feelings. We know talking about feelings and emotions may not be a natural conversation for all individuals and families, so it can be uncomfortable at first. However, if parents can cultivate an environment in which they themselves are talking about emotions and modeling what they are doing to be proactive and productive with those emotions, evidence supports that their students will follow suit and may also be more comfortable discussing those topics.
That makes so much sense. Although it's funny, I think as parents, we often feel like, okay, I have to seem like I'm the one who's totally on top of everything. And I think it wasn't probably until my own kids are now older teenagers, but I don't think I realized till they were maybe 10 or 12 that it was not only okay to say, God, I'm feeling kind of stressed right now, but it was a positive thing if I could talk to them and say, so I wonder what I can do about this, and then start discussing that. I think it's too bad that often we feel like we're not supposed to let our kids know that we're feeling this, but how else can we teach them what to do?
Absolutely.
Additionally, as parents, we need to know how stress affects us, like you said, our responses, how we react to stress. Children are always watching us while learning from our behavior, so no one is perfect, and we all handle stress differently. But by being able to start noticing how we react and the emotions we feel when stressed, it can have a huge impact on how our children handle stress. So one thing that we can do as parents and just adults in students' lives is having daily check-ins with ourselves. What a check-in would look like is just being able to focus on what is happening or is going to happen today, what you're feeling, and then what you want to be able to help you in that moment. So a coping skill, a breathing technique, anything like that. And then by being able to know what we're feeling or thinking as adults, we can brainstorm how to help ourselves. So we're able to model for our children by using sentences such as, I'm anxious today because of a meeting I have at work. I'm going to take a few deep breaths on the drive into work to help me. So using statements expressing how you're feeling can help children identify their feelings and normalizing different feelings and emotions.
I love that idea that, first of all, that your own day starts with you taking a moment and thinking, okay, what's ahead of me? And if some of it's going to be challenging, what can I have in my pocket that's going to help me? But I love the idea of just sort of mentioning that in front of your kids as their days start, because, you know, maybe then in the back of their minds later, they can be like, oh, wait, I'm a little stressed. Mom was talking or dad was talking about breathing. Maybe I can do that.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about the tool belt, too, because that's something Paige and I work on with our students, is making sure we have a variety, diversified, evidence-based coping skills that help us in those moments. Because one thing might work really well in one context, and something else might work great in another. So I really liked that.
If adults and kids want to lower their stress levels, what are some of the things they might do as a family?
So as a family, there are a lot of ways to lower stress levels. First, we can use deep breathing. So things that we use for the Chill Project are we use box breathing, star breathing, rainbow breathing. And there's a lot of different ways that you can engage with deep breathing exercise to re-engage the thinking portion of our brain, to be able to calm down those responses of our emotions and then be able to think, what is going to help me in this moment? You can also use YouTube mindful moments or meditations. There's a lot of different videos on there. There's ones that are maybe 2 minutes to 10 minutes. There's ones to wake up to in the morning, ones to go to bed to. There's a lot of different things you can use for those too. Some other things that we recommend is you can take a family walk, engage in a home workout, use yoga to calm our bodies, and then you can also use co-regulation. So co-regulation is a mutual act in exchange of calming that occurs between two people or more. So by using co-regulation, we can calm our emotions and help our children calm their emotions. So this is a great tool for parents, teachers, and anyone who is or is working with kids of any age. So it's also helping yourselves, but also helping them at the same time.
Oh, that's such a great idea. Now, I know you mentioned box breathing, rainbow breathing. Mm-hmm. We'll make sure by the time this podcast comes out, we have an article out that just explains some of those to people, because it's funny how they're all pretty simple, but you do need to learn, you're counting for box breathing or something like that. So we'll make sure we have those resources to share with our listeners. And I love this idea of co-regulation, because like you said, I think often when your kid is getting kind of dysregulated, whether you're out trying to run errands in a store or you're just at home, the parent's stress level can rise too. And I love the idea of both of you stopping and together getting to a better place. That sounds fantastic.
Absolutely.
So we know that the Chill Project has become a great resource for many students in our region. You guys are in a bunch of different school districts. I know some of our listeners probably know all about it, but can you tell us a bit about the Chill Rooms for listeners who haven't visited one?
Absolutely. Paige and I are so passionate about the work we do with the AHN Chill Project and love talking about it, so this is one of our favorite questions. The AHN Chill Project, or Allegheny Health Network Chill Project, began in 2019, and we started in two schools. Since then, the program has grown to be in over 50 locations. AHN Chill Project is an evidence-based coping skills initiative. So our program focuses on supporting students, families, teachers, staff, and really the broader community. Through evidence-based coping skills, we have been able to help school communities we are in. Our goal is to help them learn effective coping skills, as we've talked about, when feeling stressed, but also anxious, overwhelmed, much more. So while our program is in local schools, we also have new innovations, one of them being Kai and Kate through Chill Project Productions. We also have Chill Mobile, which engages with multiple schools and communities across Western Pennsylvania. And then actually, our newest innovation, which is the Pop-Up AHN Chill Room, are created and co-facilitated by Paige and myself. These are an innovation where we collaborate with organizations to bring the Chill Room atmosphere and evidence-based coping skills out into the broader community. Our biggest current collaboration is with Special Olympics Pennsylvania. We actually just had the opportunity to support them out in Villanova at their Fall Fest. It was a blast. We helped to support the athletes and coaches in that environment. So we've just really been taking what we work on as it relates to those evidence-based coping skills, again, out into the community. And we hope to grow our reach of support.
Well, I've seen some of the photos of the mobile chill vehicle and of some of the rooms in the different schools. And I love the combination of, first of all, you're just creating this kind of calming space. And like you said, it can be a pop-up. It could be the mobile one, or it could be something permanent. But then also kids and adults are learning skills while they're there. So they kind of get to take that good with them when they leave. So it's interesting. We have been hearing a lot in the past couple of years from the Surgeon General's office and elsewhere about the impact of social media on stress levels. And this is for kids, for teens, and for adults. Are there any strategies that you guys would suggest that would help people have healthier social media use and perhaps make sure that social media isn't taking up too much of their time?
Yeah, so social media has undeniably influenced stress levels across all age groups, particularly in recent years as we become more and more connected. So more and more connected virtually, but maybe not in person. One great guideline, though often challenging to implement, is to intentionally disconnect as often as possible. We live in a world where information is more accessible than ever, making it difficult to distance ourselves from it. To ease into this routine, I often encourage individuals I work with to take the small, gradual steps, like waiting 15 minutes after waking up before checking any devices, or setting aside moments in the day for a mindful moment. A lot of times, too, the students that I work with, I tell them, like, when you go home, just put your phone down. Watch TV, do something that's not directly accessible and being reached out to people. Take those time for yourself and have a snack. Play with your dog. Go for a walk. Work out. Do something that's not just you're always connected to something. And then another thing too is just the screen time limits. So being able to take that time away from the phone before you go to bed when you wake up, just not really having that screen time, decreasing that is really going to be beneficial.
Something else I really emphasize when we work with students or just individuals that come into the AHN Chill Room is to also focus on reframing our perspective on social media. So I get a lot of students who are very self-aware and admit that they are falling into like a comparison trap, and just reminding yourself that we are seeing a very curated highlight reel of a select like 5% of someone else's life, whereas we have access to 100% of our life. So just making sure we reframe our perspective can be key. And then also recognizing, like you alluded to, Paige, that social media can serve as a super powerful connective tool if we're using that in moderation with some of those guidelines that you suggested.
It can be a wonderful thing to keep us connected. I've lived in a lot of different cities, and so I have a lot of friends I don't get to see in person, and I love that I have this connection with them. But I love that idea of just being aware that limiting your time on it, like not endlessly scrolling, is something you're doing for you. I think often with kids, one thing it helps us to explain is that it's not that we're saying you're not allowed to have too much of this. It's that for you, you want to make sure you have time for other things and you're not letting it gobble up sort of all your free time. Well, thank you both so much for all this advice and just for the work you do helping families and schools in throughout the Pittsburgh community.
Thank you so much.
What I appreciate is managing stress is a lifelong skill, and there are definitely ways you can help manage stress. And I liked the concrete ideas that they had, the video series that they have. I had no idea that there was all these different types of breathing you could do. So it's definitely something that I think if you start now with your kids, not only will it help your kids, it'll also help you as a family, as you as a parent as well.
And having three teenagers, I know that there's a lot more stress sometimes for this generation than some previous ones. You know, maybe it's just different stress, but I love that we're giving them tools on how to manage it and not just figure it out on your own.
It's so true. And I think the fact that we can be vulnerable and let them know that as parents we get stressed too, that's not only something that helps us, but it really helps show them. If you can discuss with them how you're managing your own stress, I think it will help them feel like, oh, wait, adults don't have everything figured out. We're kind of all in this together.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
Teenagers have often started to develop their own strategies for dealing with stress. So we're spilling the tea with teens today with the question, what kinds of things do you do to manage stress? Here's what the students at SLB Radio's Youth Media Center learned when they asked other teenagers.
To manage stress, I have been doing some guided meditations and listen to music, read something I like, find something to distract myself.
To manage stress, I normally take some deep breaths, and sometimes, I guess, to release my emotions, I write, especially if it doesn't make sense. And I feel like if I can't talk to somebody about it, I can write it down, and then I can realize how much it doesn't make sense, and then I can rationalize a little bit.
If I have something on my mind that's like really big, then exercising is kind of, I can't do anything about this, so I'm going to do this instead. So it gives you something that you actually can deal with.
Sometimes the stress is overbearing and like art doesn't work. And so sometimes it's best to just take some time, have like a relaxing day and a day that like I take time for myself and just focus on like the basic needs. Because you can't handle stress if you don't have any sleep and you haven't been eating enough or drinking enough water, because then your brain isn't working properly.
One thing that can cause stress for some of us is the idea of AI, artificial intelligence. Maybe it's a fear of the unknown. Maybe it's that we don't understand how our kids are using it. And that's why we're tackling this topic in our next Kidsburg podcast. We find out what kids and families need to know about AI and how to use it in a productive way. We also find out how teenagers are already using it.
And we'll tell you how you can get baby and kids' clothes, toys, and equipment at discount prices at special pop-up consignment sales across Western Pennsylvania.
We'll be posting a dozen podcast episodes this winter, and if you've missed our first 12, you can find them all on any podcast streaming service. Or you can go to kidsburg.org/podcast to find them all. And be sure to sign up for our free weekly Kidsburg newsletter for resources and information to help all kids have the best opportunity to thrive.
Thanks for joining us for the Kidsburg Podcast. See you next time.